Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, it's Abigailia Shaman, sometimes co-host of Guilty Feminist and winner of Pointless Celebrities, but who's counting? I have some amazing news for you. Global Pillage is coming back, baby. We will be performing Thursday, May 9th, and Monday, June 17th, 7:30 p.m. at King's Place. I am the new host, and we have an amazing panel for you. But what we need is you. You, we need you, the hive mind, to come to the show. So you can get tickets at kingsplace.co.uk. Remember, the shows are May 9th, June 17th, 7:30 p.m. at King's Place. I'll see you there.
Hello, Guilty Feminists, and welcome to a very special Culture Club episode of the Guilty Feminist podcast. Now, today, I have the great privilege of talking to the Galilee Quartet. They are a Palestinian string quartet who play a combination of classical music, Arabic music, and their own compositions, which are inspired by a combination of the two. They are from Palestine, but they are here with me today in London. I am very excited to introduce you to Omar, Mustafa, Tiba, and Gandhi Saad. They are three brothers and a sister, and they are also a string quartet. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Guilty Feminist.
Hello. Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for coming, Omar. So just could you each tell me your name, your position in the family, where you studied your instrument and what instrument it is. So, Omar, let's start with you.
Hi, I'm Omar, and I'm the oldest of the bunch. I play viola and Arabic percussion inside the quartet, and I've done my bachelor's degree in Italy and then moved on to Scotland, to Glasgow, to do my master's degree at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland.
Wonderful. How long have you been playing?
I have been playing since I was 12 years old, basically viola. But it's a long story. I started with piano and then switched to viola. But yeah, long story short, I have been playing for the past 16 years.
Wonderful. Do you play with anyone else or just with the Galilee Quartet?
No, I'm exclusively playing a member of the family quartet and, well, yeah, for now, at least.
Wonderful.
Okay. So I am Mustafa. I am the irritable bowel syndrome of the family. And, and I'm the second one. That's what that means. And I'm a violinist. And I actually started with the violin. And until today, I'm stuck with this instrument. And I've been playing since November 2004. During my my musical journey, I studied a little bit of oud when I was very little, when I was like 7, 8. Then I stopped and then I continued by myself. And during this all these years, I started the interest of writing my own music, so I do actually also compose. I started my studies in Russia, in Astrakhan State Conservatory, and then I moved to finish my bachelor's degree in Italy, in Reggio Emilia. And then, what did I do? Yes, I did also my master's there. And with the quartet, we have went to the Accademia Stauffer in Cremona, and now we are basically in Paris, based there, studying with a former member of the Isaïe Quartet. And that's it. I think that's my journey with music so far.
Thank you so much, Mustafa.
I am Tiba. I am the anxious potato of the family. it's really how it is. And I play the cello and I sing. I didn't start with cello, and the Galilee Quartet is kind of my fault. Because when I chose to play the cello, Mustafa and Gandhi were playing the violin, and Omar had started already to play the viola, and our teacher told us that, if you study cello, you can become a quartet. And we're like, what is that? And that's how we got stuck here.
Yeah.
Help! So, so basically, I did my bachelor's in Glasgow, and then my master's in Italy, in Reggio Emilia, and with the quartet in Cremona, an arts diploma, and now, as Mustafa said, we are in Paris Regional Conservatoire, studying with Miguel da Silva.
Wonderful.
And now to the youngest of the bunch. My name is Gandhi. I started my musical journey on the piano in 2006, and then I changed for the violin because it's nicer and it's more beautiful. I don't care what pianists say, but here we are.
Or cellists.
Yes, any cellists.
We're going to get a lot of emails.
This I mean,
cello is the best. We all know it.
I mean, to be honest.
He represents himself.
To be honest, cello is the most wonderful sound of the instruments, but it is also very heavy to take with you, and
you
it's just a nuisance, you know. Anyways, so I started in 2007 playing the violin, so it's been almost 17 years, I would say. 17 years, yeah.
And very good. 24, and you've been playing for 17 years.
Yes.
Can you remember a time before the violin?
A time before the violin, I have no clue. I mean, in the family, they call me a goldfish, like because I sincerely don't remember why. But
what's your name?
It's okay. Anyways, so I started in 2007. I went when I was 18. I started my bachelor's in Geneve, in the Haute École de Musique de Genève. And in Geneva, basically.
Say Geneve again, please.
Geneve.
Geneve. So and fancy.
Yeah, Just a little disclaimer, Mustafa makes fun a lot of the French language, so...
Yeah. All of us do.
We apologize in advance.
Well, I mean, you speak so many languages so impressively that I think you're allowed to probably take the mickey sometimes.
I went to Italy too, to Reggio Emilia, and studied there for 2 years, and the Stauffer Academy with my brothers and sister. And like 2 weeks ago... Maybe 1 week ago, I was accepted also to study in the National Conservatory of France in Paris for masters.
Wonderful. That's...
And also, I am a singer. Yes.
And you're a singer too, Tibor, aren't you?
Yes.
Which we'll hear some of later, hopefully, if we're very lucky. I met you in Geneva, in fact.
Yes.
In Geneve.
Geneva.
You and I met in Geneva. We'll always have Geneva. I met you at a United Nations gig for a comedy show about migrants, and you were in the audience, and you were there at the invitation of the UN, and we got chatting afterwards in the bar after I'd done the comedy and you'd done the watching.
Yes.
And then I found out you should have been on stage because you're a brilliant, brilliant musician who was over there studying. And then you introduced me to your sister, Tibor, who turned out to be a fan of the Guilty Feminist podcast.
Yes. Actually, what happened was he told me about you, and then I started listening to the Guilty Feminist.
Oh,
I became a huge fan.
So you're the reason she's a big
yes,
fan.
Yes,
I have her origin story. So.
I had no idea.
you can go home now.
I had no idea, but like I lost my shit when we first met. Like I was so nervous because like this is someone that Gandhi met, so I shouldn't be nervous. But then I became this huge fan.
What do you mean? I'm not that.
I mean, you're my brother. You know, like you introduce us to a lot of people. You know, and it's like
I understand. And we met a few years ago before the pandemic. We met in London when you were studying in Glasgow.
During the pandemic. Summer of 2021, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, so after I graduated.
You graduated. Yes, yeah. You were up in Glasgow and you were coming back through because you were going home. And you were going, I remember at the time you were going home to Palestine. And some of our listeners might be surprised to hear that you're from Palestine, but because we know that Palestinians often... It's very difficult for them to travel outside Palestine to get permission from the Israeli government. And it's very unusual that you would be allowed to study abroad or to travel abroad for musical gigs.
Or any case, just being abroad is...
We are privileged in a sense because we have the Israeli passport, we have the Israeli citizenship. We are of the... Palestinians who survived the Nakba of 1948. So we make around 20% of the Israeli citizens. But it is a real issue for our Palestinian friends who live in the West Bank and in Gaza who have other documents. For example, if you have a refugee status or a Palestinian passport or a Jordanian passport or something like that, to leave the West Bank and to leave Gaza, you have to have permission from the Israeli authorities. It is an occupation, after all. It is a siege around Gaza. So, whenever we have a concert, let's say in Jerusalem, with Palestinian musicians, it was once we had a concert with an orchestra that had to be cancelled. We ended up actually playing quartet because we could enter Jerusalem without a permission, but all of the orchestra got denied permission. And another instance, for example, in 2016, we had a tour with the Palestinian Youth Orchestra in the UK. And, you know, apart from the permission, also Palestinians with Palestinian documents have to apply for visas to travel. So luckily, everyone got a visa, but not everyone made it to the UK. Two of our musicians were denied to leave Gaza by the Israeli authorities because what they claimed at the time was music is not enough of a reason to leave. And for a lot of Gazans, as if
medicational... It's like there is no good reason for them. You could be dying of cancer and...
They will not let you out.
It's not enough, you know.
Which has happened in the last few weeks.
Medical treatment is not...
Not only last few weeks, like it's been so many times, any times there is a complex operation that needs to be done on someone, or someone like there are a lot of babies, for example, that get are born in Gaza even before the genocide. They need special care, and oftentimes their parents don't get to go with them. So this newborn baby is being sent without their mothers, you know, to Jerusalem to be taken care of. And there are incidents where the baby dies or the mom dies because of the separation. So this has been an ongoing situation that it's not, you know, whatever has been happening recently is not sudden, you know. It's been a very long life of suffering for our people. And we have different situations. So We can travel, but our friends cannot travel freely.
Might I add to that? I'm sorry. We are the, let's say, the Palestinians that are being treated as Israeli citizens from the Israeli authority and are being brainwashed, basically, to be the good servants of the state of Israel. Because having Palestinians as a minority still in the state of Israel is a plus for them. That's that makes them diverse, that makes them more democratic, more human, let's say, in the eyes of all nations. And us declaring that we are Palestinian and not Israeli is a huge nightmare for them, because since 75 years, since the Nakba, since the expulsion of our people, still, there are people like us today, many people like us today, that still declare and that they are Palestinian and still, you know, hold on to that fact, because as much as they have done and they will continue the fact remains that we are Palestinians. The documents do not say anything. It's a privilege, but it's also a curse mm-hmm. at the same time.
We and are third-class citizens. Like, we don't enjoy the rights that everyone enjoys in under this citizenship. Like, for example, we cannot live in over 60% of the land. You
or
know,
it's
so
like we have inherited it. Inherited? How to
inherited.
Say inherited?
Yeah. Inherited anyway. Land from our grandpa.
Grandpa, and we can't houses build on it. Because, you know, it's like, you can't. You will ruin the nature. But in the same time, they have built like 4 or 5 settlements around our village.
Kibbutzim, which they call them. It's like the hip way and the cool way to call a settlement a kibbutz, like to brand it in a name that is new, like not to call it a settlement as it is, but like we have heard it many times already by Europeans when we are we're discussing about like political things with different Europeans, and they're like, you know, I know this
kibbutznik,
he's a very nice guy, and he's like a very open-minded guy. And in my mind, I would like to tell them, you do realize a kibbutznik means a settler, like.
Kibbutznik, like the idea of kibbutz is so romanticized, because in kibbutz you have a community, a more communist kind of way, socialist way of living. But the thing about kibbutz in Israel is that we are not allowed to live in those places. So as progressive as they might seem, it's not the full reality. So, yeah, there are a lot of things. And as Mustafa mentioned, that we are not allowed to build on our land, it's because we are Palestinian. It's not because they're preserving the nature. They are trying to actively stop our villages from expanding.
Diminish,
they don't want us to expand. They don't want our villages to grow.
So our villages
would that be called like
grow,
greenwashing or something?
Like,
no.
That was think a different
but
thing.
But also like another outrageous thing.
I'm trying.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I know you want to ask something new, but the most outrageous thing that can be, that if me, Mustafa, a person that has, you know, generations before him. I didn't come from anywhere. You know, I didn't come from Europe. And our grandma is still alive. She had kids when there was no Israel. And she still remembers when there was no Israel. So it's
when there were the British.
Exactly. But then it's like, if me, you know, which is, this is my land, if I accidentally, with my car, run over a dog or a cat, I would face much more harsh
consequences
from any settler actually killing me intentionally.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And this is a reality, and it has happened and many times.
They would be declared as mentally unstable to not face any charges. And most of them go free.
Just to clarify, you're Druze.
Yes.
And so you are a minority Palestinian religion / heritage. Yeah. It is part of Islam, but it is a sect of Islam.
It's a religion that is like 1,000 years old. Okay. I think it was
made in 1017.
Yeah,
like
it came up, and it was open for a few years. And then who got in, who didn't get in can never get in, which means...
So I can't convert to Druze?
Nope.
No, you are only born in
a... Close shop.
It is like the pandemic. It's
exclusive
like...
club.
Yeah.
Druze are the most VIP religious
Soho
club.
The Soho House, you know, of Muslim sect.
But it's so overrated.
Basically.
Some people would say that about Soho House.
It's basically cool. You are born Druze from a father and a mother that are Druze, and otherwise you're not. Mm-hmm. So basically, even the books, the religious books, are handwritten until this day, and it has never been printed.
They are copy sold printed out in a very, very high quantity of money.
That's
like,
not
if you want that book, you have gonna.
As we said before, it is a very exclusive VIP religious group.
Rolls Royce.
We don't know anything about, like, we cannot.
We are fairly ignorant about what the religion is talking about, because
you can't
the
books. The irony. I've seen a flaw in the system.
I mean, they are not banned books,
but it's like they have certain rules.
The rules are very strict, even. Yeah, the rules are very strict, even for Druze people that are not religious.
So that might bring us to our first piece of music. What are you going to play for us?
Okay, I should be talking.
Yes.
Probably.
Okay.
Mustafa, fill us in.
So it's called Esordio. Esordio in Italian means debut. Or
a debut, a beginning.
A beginning. So it's like a beginning, but a fancier word for a beginning. And
trust the Italians.
Yeah. I was like, I need a special word for it. Because it was written when I just moved to Russia. I was 19 or 18, 19. And it was the first thing I did when I got there and I got the computer. And then I wrote a piece it was like my beginning in that country. And we usually perform this piece everywhere we go, everywhere we play for the first time, as a beginning of a new thing, a new connection with the audience, with the people that are gonna hear this piece. So this is gonna be Esordio, and I hope you like it. If you don't like it, just...
It's your problem.
Or just imagine a world without...
No, you know, you would love it. Nah. Mustafa is a fantastic composer.
Oh, thank you.
Excellent. Well,
and an amazing violinist.
Well, welcome to The Guilty Feminist. This is your beginning here, and we look forward to hearing this piece very much.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, Thibaut, this is your first time on The Guilty Feminist, and I believe, because you're a fan of the show, you have been writing some I'm a Feminist buts. Yes. Could you please tell us what your I'm a Feminist buts are?
Okay.
Oh, that's a lot.
No, I'm only saying like one or two. Okay. I'm a feminist, but I need a man to control my social media access on my phone, and that man is my youngest brother, Gandhi.
Oh, wow. Gandhi, yeah, is this true? You're a feminist, Gandhi, but yet you control a woman's social media. Please.
Yeah, because I love controlling women. No.
I failed that exam. She was like always coming to me and said, can you open it? And one time I was like, Thibaut, it's like 1, 5, 6, 8. And she's like, why did you tell me this? And I was like,
But I mean, the problem is that I look incredibly unfeminist when I do that, and I always have to explain myself while doing that, and please don't understand me, please don't cancel me, I am a feminist. So,
and I will explain the thing. So I asked Gandhi for help because I get stuck on social media, like in a bad way. And like for a long time I was like, I should be able to control myself, but... Who am I to
zero.
Like?
You know that independent woman, she's not.
I'm a strong independent woman, but I cannot fight a machine that's built to make me addicted, you know?
We all have this problem.
Yes. And like, really, I don't judge anyone if they get stuck a lot because it's seriously, it's built by psychologists and people who specialize in making us addicted. So we have to find a way. And my ultimate way is to have... full control, like absolute control.
Do you control Gandhi's though?
No, because she is not as strong as me, so it's...
he's much of a more independent
no,
woman.
The thing is, the thing is, whenever she asks me to open her Instagram, and sometimes I refuse, because I've seen her get stuck that day and she gets mad about it. And I was like, but you asked me to do this. Like,
yeah,
this
no,
is what
no.
I am here for.
Sometimes She's I do like, get angry, but it's like, yeah. At the same time, we did agree that he does get to tell me no. Like, he does get to tell me no if he sees that no. It's,
you see how the tables have not, reversed?
No,
I say no and she doesn't understand that no means no. So this is problematic. I mean, you should find a cure. I don't.
Omar was the special guy for this job, and then he has resigned because it was too much.
Yeah.
Because he would say no, and she would be upset with him, and he's like, why did you do this?
And then I'm a people pleaser.
This was supposed to be a funny thing, and now you're making it a family discussion.
Go to the next one.
Okay. Do you have any more?
Okay, wait, which one should I... I'm a feminist, but I like to always expect my brothers to be always available to carry my luggage and cello and anything light or heavy.
So do you think you'd be a better feminist if you played the violin?
Viola. Possibly. The viola's better.
The viola.
The viola, yes.
Viola lives matter.
I wouldn't be a good feminist as a violinist because violinists, well, they are not good people. Violists are nicer.
You see,
there is more
what
empathy.
What she says in front of our face. Can you imagine the things that she does?
But really, violists have much more empathy.
Thibaut thinks that being a feminist is actually the concept of being a princess.
No, that's not true.
Yeah.
Listeners, I have spent most of the day with this quartet, and I have to say, it is a delightful and rowdy family. They tease each other all the time, and it's really fun to be part of. Can you tell me what your next piece of music is? Did you write this one as well, Mustafa?
Yes. This one is called Touring Galilee. Since we are the Galilee Quartet, we come from the Galilee. We were all born in Nazareth. And
where Jesus was born.
No, he was born in Bethlehem.
Oh, of course he was. Sorry, where he was
but
raised.
But he went,
sorry,
he spent...
His oh my God, of course. Oh, yes. Where he was raised.
Yeah. Mary.
I mean,
it's,
I have
it's
been...
a common mistake.
How can you not know
also,
that?
Where he was raised, I didn't know that.
Oh my God.
Palestinians in Nazareth actually think there.
No, I didn't know that. He was a Nazarene, though. He just... His parents had to go to Bethlehem for the census.
Exactly.
And then they went back because that's where he was born and raised. And that's where he walked on water. It's like a real fisherman town.
Yeah.
Didn't he
walk to the water in Tiberias?
That happened in Tiberias. It's
You're
20...
informational.
Sorry,
we are Druze, but we know about Christians more than you.
I'm usually really good on this stuff because I was in a Christian sect when I was younger and we were really hot on the Bible. Are you saying he didn't walk on the water in Galilee?
No, actually,
I mean, in Galilee, yes.
I think he walked on rocks, but it was in Tiberias. But
in Galilee. It happened in Galilee, but it was in the Sea of Galilee, which is in Tiberias.
But
let's not talk.
So this piece is called Touring Galilee. Since we are the Galilee Quartet, we come from the Galilee. And it's the most beautiful area in Palestine, historical Palestine. It's full of everything. It has the sea, it has the mountains, and it has some natural resorts or stuff like that. It's really amazing. And I think the best food exists there.
In the world?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think so. Also the coffee, you know. It's where we add cardamom to the coffee. It's in the Galilee. It's a beautiful place. And the piece is actually kind of melancholic because it is a piece, when I wrote it, it was a very, very sad period for the family, not for the quartet as a musical group only, but for the family as a family, because it's not a happy time for the, it was not a happy time for the family, nor the quartet as a family, because at that period, Omar was imprisoned for refusing to serve in the occupation army as a conscious objector, you know, in the only democracy in the Middle East, where when you say, I don't want to do that because I am a peace man, you would go to jail. So I really doubt the democracy in that. And when Omar was sent to jail, we suffered as a family because it was not cool seeing my mom crying every day, or my father losing his mind because they took his oldest son and unfairly. And for me, you know, since I was born, Omar was my roommate. And suddenly I have no roommate, you know. And it was a sad period. So I decided to give him a gift for when he goes out of prison. And the best gift was to play together, all of us. So when I wrote that piece, I thought that one day we will be famous enough to be playing music in Europe. And if people didn't come to the Galilee, we'll bring Galilee to them. So it's like when I wrote this piece, I didn't think of writing it to a string quartet. I wrote it for Omar, Tiba, Mustafa and Gandhi. So when you see that piece, it was written in a way that the other one, Isordio, is a more developed one, musically speaking, because when I wrote Touring Galilee, it was the first one, so we had a lower level. So I wrote it adapting to each one's level on their instruments. So
especially for me, because I was new on the cello.
She was new on the cello, so. And I always want to rearrange it, and they say, no, it's beautiful as it is, because it represents that period and that. And it has its special effects on people. It combines the traditional background we have coming from Palestine, being Arab and having the Arabic music, and our studies of classical music, which is a bridge of both and with some improvisation in the end. And I just hope you like it.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. Our tour down under begins, and we can announce our amazing co-hosts for these shows on the 11th of May in Auckland, the 14th of May in Wellington, and the 15th of May in Christchurch. I am going to be co-hosting for the first time with the incredible stand-up comedian from Aotearoa, Michelle Acourt. I know she's huge in New Zealand and a massive feminist, and I'm very, very excited. We tried to work with her before, and her daughter very inconveniently gave birth that night. I can't think of a more feminist reason not to come. So we're very, very excited. Then we'll be in Adelaide on the 18th of May with Geraldine Hickey. After that, we're coming to you, Perth, on the 20th of May with Claire Hooper. Then we'll be in Sydney on the 23rd of May with Geraldine Hickey. And then we'll be in Melbourne on the 25th of May. I am not allowed to say who the co-host is, but she is a big Australian favourite and she's amazing. I am not allowed to announce her yet because she's so famous and fabulous. And the guest is an A-list Australian star. Again, we're just getting permission to announce her. So I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, our tickets are going fast everywhere, but I would recommend if you're in Melbourne especially, you get your tickets now before the announcement is made, because you are going to want to see these people. And we also have some incredible activist voices and other special stuff going on. The last two dates are in Brisbane on the 27th of May with the wonderful Alice Fraser, and in Canberra on 28th of May, we end the tour with Kirsty Wiebeck. Grace Petrie is coming out and she's doing all the dates with me. We're also going to have poets, activists, incredible guests. It's going to be, do you remember how buzzy the tour was last time and everyone was hysterical at the end? It's going to be like that again. So do not miss out. Get tickets now at guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows. You can also get an ad-free version of the podcast from Patreon, Apple Podcasts or Acast Plus from as little as £2.50 a month. And that really helps to support the podcast and pay all the wonderful people who support me in bringing you The Guilty Feminist every week. You can also show support in a way that costs you nothing by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and giving The Guilty Feminist a 5-star review, even though you've done it before, because it really, really helps other people find us in a very crowded market with a weird algorithm pushing people further to alt-right content every week. And so we'd really, really love it if you'd tell people about it, share it online. And now back to the podcast.
Omar, that music was very moving. And especially since we knew what it was about. What was it like for you being a conscientious objector? Did you know you were going to go to prison?
Yes, basically the whole story started when we came back from a tour with the Palestine Youth Orchestra, and I had received my first letter from the authorities asking me to go in and do all the exams and so on, so that they can, you know your abilities, what you can do best, etc., to know in which unit they would actually put you in. And I had refused to go there, and we started, you know, my father, you know, being studying social political studies and philosophy, he was a very good mentor for these types of situations where he would pretend, for example, to be, you know, a militant, an officer, you know, interrogating me and asking me why I wouldn't go, and, you know.
So you role-played with your father?
Yes, basically for a long time. And him and my mother, they raised us all to be part of the Palestinian people. And we were never, you know, denied our origins and our beliefs in us being part of this this Palestinian cause. So,
what was it like when you were arrested?
Basically, we went there as a family. We went there as musicians. We went there as a group, as a string quartet, and we played in protest in front of the recruitment office. We were accompanied by many friends, less family members, because our family, like my mother, father, and us siblings, are, let's say, in a different, you know, we represent ourselves. Mm-hmm. And being, you know, believers of this narrative that we are Palestinian and we should stick to our origins, you know, is different than many people that surround us, you know. So we were there with many friends and not family. Friends that we chose as our own family, let's say. And we played in protest, and I had read a letter that I've written to the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense at the time, and turned myself in, basically, because they give you the choice. Either you go there, turn yourself in, or they leave you, you know, as a person that is trying to escape military service. So they leave you, they can leave you for years.
And then just arrest you at any point.
And then, so you're denied from going to school, you're denied from going to university, you're denied from leaving the country. And your life is basically, you know, stuck in one point. And at any point during the day, during the night, on the street, in your home, whatever, they can come and arrest you for that. So.
And you were arrested how many times did you have to go back? To jail? Because you go for a short time and then you're released, and then they say you have to go, and then you go back into jail, and then they say now you have to go, and they're trying to wear you down. But you weren't worn down. How many times were you arrested?
I turned myself in 7 times.
7 times?
Yeah. I went there and refused 7 times. And they told us that, you know, after 100 days spent in prison, you can apply for a conscientious objector, you know, committee. Mm-hmm. So you go there, you apply for it. They have their reasons, you know, to believe or not, or to grant you this meeting with the committee, on which they will decide to give you, you know, an exemption based on your conscience.
But you have to do 100 days in prison first before.
First, you have to do 100 days in prison, and then, when you do have that meeting, they have ridiculous questions like, are you vegan? Because they have requirements to be a conscientious objector. If you are a conscientious objector and a peaceful man, you have to be peaceful in any way. You have to be.
So you have to say, I'm a vegan because I'm
an extremist. you know, an extremist.
Well, many ballisters would say being vegan is not an extreme position.
Yeah, I know.
It's not hurting anybody else, but it does seem like a continuation of the same idea, but it sort of seems strange to say, well, if you're...
They have requirements, basically. Like, you have to be vegan, and up until the point that if you see a person's, you know, stepping on an ant, you would, you know, you would have a breakdown, a mental breakdown, because this is you're against killing any human being or any being for any reason or any animal, you know. So they take every sort of peaceful.
So you have to become a vegan to be a conscientious objector.
That's one of their requirements, of their, you know. Requirements. One of their requirements.
And not any and vegan, take, like you have to they be take like any, I don't any know. I don't take this apple because I don't know there is a kid who have collected this apple instead of a. Mm-hmm.
It didn't fall from the tree on its own, you know.
Right, right.
So
right.
They take.
So you
any,
have to kind of. Yeah.
You have to be extreme in any sort of way.
So eventually, you were able to get this. Vegan.
I didn't even apply for it because I found their requirements for it to be absurd and
so
really unrealistic.
How did they stop arresting?
And no, I didn't. They didn't stop arresting me. That's the thing. I turned myself in every time, and I went there willingly.
So does it make you scared that you could be arrested any time?
No, because it's not about being arrested any time. It's about having my life stopped for so long and having to wait for them to come to me. So I always went to them because I wanted to move on, you know. That was one part of my life that I wanted to move on and to go forward, you know.
He was not released so, because they were nice. They poisoned him.
Yeah, I'm getting there. So, yeah, after seven times, on the seventh time in prison, they poisoned my food and they denied me medical treatment for 3 days. On the fourth day, I arrived to the hospital after convincing them to take me to the hospital.
She's blacking out.
Well, I arrived to the stage that I couldn't stand up. They would carry me, my cellmates would carry me around, you know, from one place to another to breakfast, to lunch, to go back to the cell, sometimes to the bathroom because I couldn't even stand. And on the fourth day, I arrived to the hospital with 1 hour to live because I had a liver infection. My liver got bigger. Basically, it arrived to 20 centimeters instead of 16. And I had water in my lungs. My blood got thicker. And it was a very horrible situation to be in. And the doctor said that if I had arrived 1 hour later, I would have been dead, basically.
Goodness me.
Or even if he arrived at the same time but didn't insist on getting an antibiotic pill before going, he would have also arrived.
It's a long story. Like I don't really want to dive into details because we don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, basically, doctor said that any other person would not have survived 1 day in my conditions. And because they didn't know which type of hepatitis was it. It wasn't A, it wasn't B, it wasn't C. It was something in the liver that they didn't know. It was something out of their control, basically. So
I'm so glad that you survived it. It must have been terrifying for your parents and the rest of your family and for you. I'm glad you're here and I'm glad you were able to come out and play that beautiful piece of music with your brothers and your sister.
Can I add one little thing? I will translate because Umar has this pride that he never admits to being, you know, hurt or really feeling bad. And when we saw him in the hospital, he was feeling well. The doctor that saved his life was a German Jewish guy. And the words that he described in Hebrew to us, to Umar's situation, was Alsaf Krisat Ma'arachot, which on Google Translate goes to like on the brink of system collapse. So that's how far it has got his situation in prison. And that's in the same time, we don't want to say that it was really cool because when even he got in the hospital, I've heard this sentence, when the special, I don't want to say their names, came to say to the doctor of Omar, okay, we have now to move Omar from Haifa to Tel Aviv hospital. And the doctor said, no, you can't, because he will die on the way, because he is in this condition.
He's in an intensive unit. You know, he was in intensive care unit for three days.
Yeah, and it was crazy. They wanted to move him. And the doctor said, if you take him out of this room, he will die on the way. And actually, when Omar heard that, he realized how bad the situation was, because no one have told him. And he wanted to fight because we actually had to almost physically get into fight with the officers, the special units.
Yeah,
they came in special units with the bodybuilders. And we had to, me and my father had to really fight and actually go to death or death situation. Or you go out, or we are going to fight until death.
I mean, imagine...
I'm not going to lose my son, or I'm not going to lose my brother, just because you are a stupid person that wants to take him out of this prison because your superior said that. Let me call your superior, tell him to come here so we can talk, because the doctor says you are doing an illegal thing. You are literally killing him. So that's how Omar got his...
I mean, that's how he got into the hospital in the first place. It was poison. And, you know, it's at the time... Sorry, my mom.
Yes, we have to talk about it, man. It kills us.
At the time... I didn't realize the gravity of this because Omar is my older brother. I was 15 at the time, but he was 18. And now, as a 25-year-old, I look back and I think, he was a child, you know? He was 18. How do they feel okay with imprisoning an 18-year-old and poisoning an 18-year-old? And you know what got him out? Mustafa and my dad and... the whole family, we organized a campaign for the media, for Omar, and Amnesty got with us. We had a campaign with Amnesty International. We were protesting so many times, like we used to go on the mountain next to the prison. When Omar was in the hospital, we also arranged a protest outside, and we were always trying very hard to show the world in the media. And a very big thing for Israel is the media. So they realized, I think, that it made them really look bad, and it would make them look worse if he dies. And so freeing him or releasing him didn't come because they care about him or that they have any kind of integrity or respect for human rights. They were losing the media.
They were starting to lose.
You know?
Imagine being so threatened by a conscientious objector.
Who is 18 years old,
who is saying, I would not want to participate in your war machine. I would not want to fight my brothers and sisters. And putting some guards outside of his room in the intensive cares unit in the hospital
with rifles
outside as if he is some kind of a terrorist. So,
or a criminal, you know.
Or like, a criminal.
He's this peaceful person.
His only crime, and I would say this with a grain of salt, his only crime was not wanting to be a killer.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I know it must be painful to go over that ground. It's very eye-opening, and it will be for many of our listeners, and it's something that we need to consider. Next time you come back on, Tiba, I know you want to talk about democracy and about how a democracy might work, and that for a democracy, everyone needs to be political. You want your citizens to be political. And so we'd really love to get you back over to do a live show with an audience and for you to play live. And we will also record it, and we can talk more then about democracy and about the way that you as young Druze musicians are allowed to leave, and what kind of advocacy you can do with your music and your stories and your truth. And I know that our audience would love to come out and see that. Will you come back and join us again?
Absolutely. Of course.
We would be honored.
Thank you.
It would be an honor.
Thank you.
Could you tell us what your final piece of music is for the podcast today?
Okay, so the final piece is a song. It's a lullaby sang usually by Palestinian women to their children. And to tell it in short terms, it's a song, it's a lullaby about resistance, saying that we would rather fight and resist and not live under occupation or humiliation.
Mm-hmm. You told us before that your grandmother remembers the Nakba. Yes. She remembers a time before the Israeli state. Did she sing this to you when you were children? Did your mother sing it to you? Have you heard this song in your own home?
Actually, our mother. I still remember this song sang to us by my mother. And up until this day, if I do hear it from my mother, I start crying because it's the only voice that moves me, actually. And it takes me back for more peaceful days of my life. No, we're talking about Yom Hawa. Yes, Yom Hawa.
You were little Tiba.
I'm sure this will move us, so get your tissues ready, listeners.
And it's called Yumma Mwel El Hawa.
What does that mean?
Yumma Mwel El Hawa.
I don't really know. Incredibly intranslatable.
It's an untranslatable word. Well, I'm sure the language of music will.
Yumma means mum. Mwel El Hawa means.
Yeah. I don't want even to start explaining it.
Sometimes
I think hearing
we'll
it will
feel it. We'll feel it in the music.
Thank you.
Is there any way, if our listeners are moved by your story, Oman, want to know more about it, is there anywhere that they can hear or see more about your experience?
So I'm not sure if the Omar's case with Amnesty is still on the website of Amnesty.
It is.
But there is... Oh, it cool. is. Amazing.
We're going to be with Amnesty in a few days, actually, in Paris.
Yes.
Yeah, Amnesty France.
Yeah. There is a movie, a documentary made by our dear friend Karim Dridi called Galili Quartet. There is a version of it on YouTube. And this movie, a documentary, follows the journey from when Omar announced himself as a conscientious objector up until he first turns himself in.
Him,
so you can see our like concert protest, basically. So this is one way to know some of the story.
And we can find that on YouTube under Galilee Quartet.
Yes, and we will give you the link.
Wonderful. And we can put that in the show notes. And also in the show notes, we can put links to your socials or if anyone would like to book you for a concert. Are you at Galilee Quartet on Instagram?
Yes.
Yes.
We are new and we are cute. We are planning to expand
Our profile on Instagram hasn't been updated in a while.
But you are, I believe, doing new clips and putting them up there.
Hopefully, yes, we will update.
So give them a follow. There'll be new clips soon. I'm sure many, if not all of our listeners, have been watching the horrors in Gaza unfold with a great deal of sadness and sometimes a desperation as to what we can do to help. Is there anything you would like our listeners to do?
I think the only thing that we can ask is for more pressure. Whatever you think that you are doing and it is not, you know, being effective, it is being very much effective. Boycott, divestment and sanction. And talk about it as much as you can. Cease fire now and stop this genocide. We deserve to live. We are full of culture. We are full of potential. We are full of talent. And all Palestinians are. And we are just lacking opportunity. So be our opportunity and cease fire now.
And look out for whenever you vote. You could learn a lot about foreign policy. If things don't affect you directly, they affect other people. We were aware about the Biden administration. We were aware about politics in the UK, in different parts of Europe. We are always aware before someone gets elected, whether they support Zionism or not.
Yeah, if you want to elect someone, ask your Arab friends.
Yes, basically, ask your Arab friends.
This person will advocate for killing us, and this one will not.
So, yes, yeah. You could be literally saving lives by being political. And if you are not political, I am sorry to tell you, you are not being part of a democracy. So if you care about democracy, be political.
Thank you so much, Omar, Mustafa, Tiba and Gandhi, the Galilee Quartet. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to talk to you today to hear you play.
It's been an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.